Welcome to this podcast version of the longest-running soccer radio talk show in North America. Soccer is a Kick in the Grass. Heard exclusively right here on soccerisakickinthegrass.com. Your hosts, former Rochester Lancers trainer Joe Redcard Ziriani and Andrew Battisti. Soccer is a Kick in the Grass podcasts are brought to you by the following sponsors: Salvatore's Pizza, JC Fibers of Rochester, and Top Notch Monogramming. Now here's Soccer is a Kick in the Grass.
Hello, this is Andrew Battisti, and welcome to this edition of SoccerIsKickInTheGrass.com podcasts. Today we have part two of our interview with the former owner of the Rochester Lancers, Mr. Charlie Sciano, as we continue our series on the history of soccer in Rochester. The topic of this podcast is the year 1970, the year the Lancers won the North American Soccer League title. Charlie will be discussing a number of the players that played key roles on the championship team, and Charlie also recounts his first head coaching job in the North American Soccer League with the Lancers. But we start off with a question that was posed by one of our listeners on soccerisakickinthegrass.com. And if you would like to have a question answered by Charlie Sciano about the history of soccer in Rochester, write me at andrew@soccerisakickinthegrass.com, and we will pose your question to Charlie on a future installment of this interview series. So let's start by finding out how our professional soccer team in Rochester came to be known as the Lancers.
Before we start, there's a question that actually somebody wrote to me at andrew@soccerisakickinthegrass.com and asked a very simple question: where did the name Rochester Lancers come from? So why don't you tell us about that?
Well, the name Rochester Lancers came from a meeting that Rudy Lepore and I were designated to select a name and bring it back to the executive committee in 1967. And we played with a lot of names, the Rochester Raiders, the Panthers. And then I there's a name that was dear to me because it was, I went to Assumption University, which later became known as Windsor University. And when we were first at Windsor and playing basketball there, we were known as the Raiders. And then in my sophomore year, we changed our name, and my roommate was from Rochester, Richard Moriarty, and he came up with the name Lancers, and we were known as University of Windsor Lancers, and I always loved that name. When I suggested the Rochester Lancers, it just caught on. It was Lamar Hunt, for example, just loved that name. He said it was beautiful, short, catchy, you know, seven letters of what you want in a name. And it worked out extremely well, but it was my former university where we played basketball, and that's how we got the name Rochester Lancers. And that's the story, Andy. That's how it came about.
How about that? So it came from Canadian basketball, of all things. Names come from all different places, and so we're obviously very... It did stick. It was a great name, and obviously when we had, later on, when Dragon Popovich came on as coach, we had the Dragon as our mascot with the fire extinguisher.
That was my idea, too.
we'll get to that when we get into the later part of the 70s, but let's talk about the move to the NASL. What did you, as the owner and the team, do to prepare for the move to the NASL? What did you look at for talent, and how did things change?
Well, the first thing we had to do, Andy, was improve the quality of play, and we needed to get a coach, a good coach who had international experience. And I think it was Tony Pilano who suggested that Alex Paroli, who was in Montreal at the time, as I recall, was an experienced international coach who had coached the experience and managerial experience in Europe, and had played in Austria, as I recall, and been very successful in Mexico for Guadalajara and some other teams. So we brought Alex to Rochester and interviewed him, and we offered him the job. And Alex then did bring us a couple of great players. One of them was a player who we knew in 1970 as Raul Herrera, a Brazilian. And There was some problem. I'll never know what really happened, but his real name was Renato Bacosta, because when he came back in 71, we used his real name. I suspect that there were little shenanigans by our coach, because he never told us that Raul Herrera's real name was Renato Bacosta until after he had played for us for a year. So I suspect he had been banned from soccer for a year or something, and Alex pulled one of his deals. And this is just my suspicion. I never really asked because I didn't want to know. When the new name came about, Renato Da Costa, which is his real name, now he was a great forward. He just a wonderful person, a great forward, and he just contributed so much to our team. So he brought him, and he brought a wonderful midfielder by the name of Luis Marotti. And I'll tell you, if Andy, you've never seen Luis Marotti play, this is a player who could distribute the ball, hold the ball, and he was just a magnificent player in terms of possession, distribution, and we had the forwards with Renato Da Costa, also known as Raul Herrera, and Carlos Medetieri up front, and we had a wonderful Haitian player by the name of Edner Bertone. Pat and I made a connection with the Detroit Cougars, owned by Sam Ford. They were in the North American Soccer League, and we made a deal to bring some of their players here during the season when the Cougars were still in existence. Well, the Cougars went out of existence, but we picked up Edner Bertone, and we picked up Dick Howard, who was a substitute goalkeeper. That's how we got Dick Howard, and that's how we got Bertone, and we went to Detroit. It was odd. We went to Detroit right after the riots in Detroit in 69, and they were crazy. Pat and I, the streets were deserted, and we're wandering through the city of Detroit and the National Guard are patrolling the streets, and we made the deal and went to see the Cougars play, and Sam Ford from the Ford family was very nice, and we formed an agreement with them, and then they went out of business, but we already had Bertone, and we had Dick Howard. He was with us, so we're pretty strong up front and down the middle. Then I got a call from Peter Short. Peter was a great defender and played for Dallas, but couldn't get along with some of the people in Dallas who were managing the Dallas team, not Lamar Hunt, but some of the players. So he called and said, look, I got a free transfer, and we'd like to play for you guys. So that's how we got Peter. He called me.
Peter Short ended up being a two-time first-team NASL defender for the Rochester Lancers. But we passed over a name pretty quickly, Charlie, that we probably shouldn't have, and that is the name Carlos Medetieri, who is the only man. This is a great trivia question. For all you people who love trivia, ask all the soccer nuts, who's the only man to win the NASL MVP on two occasions? You may hear the name Pelé, Quinalia, Beckenbauer, Cruyff, but no, it was our man, Carlos Medetieri. Now, Charles, tell us how we got Carlos Medetieri to play for the Lancers.
Well, Carlos Medetieri, also known as Topolino, the little mouse, that was his nickname from Brazil. He was in Los Angeles, and he had played for the Los Angeles Wolves. He played for a while for the Boston Tigers in the American Soccer League. And I got word through the grapevine that he was released and free in Los Angeles. So I got his cell phone number. We looked it up. I gave him a call, and I said, hey, Carlos. I had never met him. I said, Charlie Shannon, Rasha, hey, you wanted me to come play for you? I said, yeah, Carlos, we'd like to have you come play for us. And I think we signed him for the ridiculously low sum that first year of $75 a game. And that's how we got Carlos in the first. We got him here and got him going. And he was, you know, exciting to describe Carlos as a player in his prime when we had him. It's very difficult because he was short, compact. He had thighs, I swear, were 72 inches each around. But he had the ability to dribble the ball, take on, if you just put one defender on him, he would beat him with the ball. He would out-dribble him, and then he had great speed, and he could hold the ball. And there was one incident that's still vivid in my memory, Andy, is that we were playing Dallas, and he dribbled into the far corner at Hollander Stadium, and he held the ball. And he held the ball next to the flag. He just held it. The defender could not get him. He had his back to the goal, and the people were booing him. I knew why he was holding the ball because nobody was in the middle, and he was waiting for Raul Herrera to come down, rush it down the middle. And I'll tell you, he waited. It seemed like 2 minutes, but it was only maybe 30 seconds. But he held the ball, defender, two defenders. Then he dribbled two defenders, and he put that pass right on the mark and all right in the center of the goal. And all Raul had to do, or Renato had to do, was just touch it. It was just a magnet, just holding the ball and placing it in the right position to cross.
Who would you compare, for all kids out there who never sought to see Carlos play, who would you compare him to? It sounds like a player maybe like a Maradona would be a good comparison.
The closest comparison would be a Maradona, because not Georgie Best or not Pelé, he had a wicked shot. Carlos had a very powerful shot. We were playing a game in Montreal, and we were doing the broadcast. I had Billy Gibbons and I up in Montreal against the Montreal Alouettes, and he had a 30-yard direct kick from the left side, and so he had a very short, it was really, he hit a banana shot that just curved around in the far corner of the goal, and Woosnam said to me, that is a first division goal in any country in the world, Charlie. He said, 30 yards to the left, almost. He said, that was a perfect banana. Goalkeeper didn't have a shot, didn't have a chance. He was at the near post, and he went to the far post, just curved in. It was, think of it, everybody was just stunned. It was just to let you know, it was just a myth. Just magnificent.
So he was, coming from Brazil, obviously, he played the beautiful game.
Yeah.
He, dribbling and shooting, and so that type of player the fans had to love Carlos.
Oh yeah, he was their favorite. Carlos was absolutely spectacular. It's hard to describe the many great players that we had for the Lancers. And I kind of look and think of some of them, but they go on and on and on. And I tell you, I think he was one of the greatest we ever had. And we had some great players playing for us, but. You gotta go with that guy, because he was fantastic.
And Carlos was tied for the league lead in scoring in 1970, 14 goals and 7 assists for the Lancers. Again, was the MVP of the league. Another player though that we brought in 1970, who almost everybody knows this name, Frank Godoy. Tell us about how we got Frank.
Well, we had a problem. I guess you gotta get the history behind it. We had Alex Paroli, and we won our first two games in the North American Soccer League. They were away games. Our first game was at Dallas, and we won it with a great goal. It was a trickle goal, but it was by Carlos Minutieri, and we won it 1-0. Then we went up to St. Louis, and we played in St. Louis. We won that game, I think it was 2-3, and we came home. We came home to play with the Kansas City Spurs. That was it, the Kansas City Spurs, and we lost that game. And then we tied the next six. And I was...
Tied the next six?
Yeah, we tied the next six games. And so I was, at this point, I was really upset about what was happening. And Alex was a great defensive coach. And he would... He didn't open up the game at all. He'd play defense, wait for a mistake, and Carlos would go in to score a goal, or Moratti would sneak one in, or Renato would get one. And it was 1-1, 2-1, 2-2. And it was he played a very tight, controlled game. He didn't open the game up. And I thought with Luis Moratti and Carlos that we had a team that could play. It opened the game up. We used the wings. We played very tight, almost a Catenaccio. So we're on our way to St. Louis. And again, now this is our second trip to St. Louis, because we played every team twice. We're on our way to St. Louis. That's a Sunday. And I just decided that I had to show Alex that we could score goals. So I, Alex was standing there. I said, Alex, you don't look well. I think you ought to go home. And he goes, no, I'm fine. No, Alex. I said, you ought to go home. I said, took a ticket out of his pocket. Go home. You've got the flu. And so he left. And I said, I took the team to St. Louis. And I got into Chicago, and then my name was being called over all over O'Hare Airport. And there was Pat Denofel calling, are you all right? Is it okay? I said, Pat, it's okay. I decided to coach the team this game, only to show that, I said, keep it, don't announce anything, just say Alex was sick. And so I was supposed to do the color of that game, you see. So Billy Gibbons is up there, and I said, Billy, just call the game without the color, and don't even mention I'm coaching the team. Well, I had a team, and I sat with them, I said, look, we're going to open this game up. I said, I want you forwards to go in, we're going to play a 4-2-4, but I want everyone to attack, everyone to defend. I said, we're going to play total soccer, go all the way.
Four forwards. You played 4-4-2-4.
I played 4 forwards.
Wow.
I played 4 forwards. We creamed St. Louis. We beat them 5-1, right? 5-1 we beat them. It could have been 20-0. The Brazilian goalkeeper, I forget his name, who later was a Brazilian goalkeeper for the Cosmos, he comes up to me and says, "Charlie, goddamn you." He says, "You killed me." I said, he said, "You opened these guys up, Carlos Mentier was shooting." We were just, I just kept Paco Oliveri back on defense, and I sent Moratti up, you know, and I sent everybody up, and we just spread the field, and we just peppered that poor goalkeeper. He was magnificent. The Brazilian goalkeeper, we still had 5 goals. We just opened it up. So I got back, and there was quite a bit of a discussion about what I had done, and we tried to keep it quiet. And finally, we kept Burley around for a while. Then it was just too much, you know, because I kept on harping, and we had to play attacking soccer. Burley wanted to play the controlled game. And finally, Alex sort of decided to part ways. But I had to coach some more games. So I'm coaching, practicing law, and going crazy. And then Sal DeRosa's team is in the Scorpions, are in the American Soccer League.
It's the Syracuse Scorpions.
Yeah. And I figured, look, Sal's a good coach, and he had been with us before in the American Soccer League. So I gave Sal a call. I said, "Sal," he said, "Charlie, we're going out of business in Syracuse, blah, blah." I said, "How'd you like to come and be our coach?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Listen, since you're going out of business, bring Adoy with you. Bring your goalkeeper." And we got to pick up the goalkeeper. And he brought two or three other lads with him. We picked up 4 players. And we got...
Jim Lefkos was one of the players.
Jim Lefkos came. We had 5, really. We picked up Alex. So really, we filled out the team very nicely with Lefkos and Adoy. In the midfield, we were pretty powerful.
Now, what did Frank Adoy bring to the table as a player?
Frank was a tremendous defensive midfielder. I mean, his shot was about the softest shot with those big, strong legs I ever saw in my life. But he was a great defensive midfielder. He marked Pelé out of several games that we played Pelé. Even when we played Pelé with Santos in 74 or 75, it was his assignment to mark Pelé. He marked him right out of the game. He did a hell of a job against him in the 77 game, too, here. He could hold the ball, very good distributor, but an excellent defender. And he and Eskos in the back, when we picked up Eskos, were tremendous, really tremendous. Yeah. Eskos we picked up in 71.
Yeah, we'll get to Francisco Eskos, we don't want to forget, but there's one other name that was an all-star in 1970, and we mentioned him in our last interview, the Scotsman, Charlie Mitchell.
Well, Charlie Mitchell, you know, came to us really in 67. We were searching for players, and we found that Charlie was up in Sudbury. And we contacted Charlie, and he had Davy Thompson with him, and Davy Thompson... was an excellent midfielder, a good attacking midfielder, could spread the ball, and a very good passer. And so we picked up Charlie in 67, and later part of 67. He was with us for a long time, till 75, I think. But Charlie Mitchell came with Davy Thompson.
And then the last name I have on my list here, our goalkeeper from Brazil, Claude Campos.
No, he came by way of Syracuse. He came with Sal DeRosa. We brought Sal, we brought Campos with us.
And Campos was our goaltender for 5 years.
The Black Cat. He had some great games, wonderful games.
So in the 1970 season, the Lancers, I believe, led the league in attendance, correct?
Yeah.
But the team finished 9-6-9. So actually, the team was the third best team in the league. Washington was the top team. There were two divisions,
right.
North and South. Washington right. had the team, the Darts, that came over with the Lancers from right. the American Soccer League, 14-4-6, and then the Atlanta Chiefs were 11-5-8. But in that year, only the two division winners played for the championship.
Yeah.
And Washington had to be the favorite because they had the best record in the league, won 14 games. But it was a home-and-home series, total goals, just like we see today. And that first game here in Rochester really set the tone. And
yeah, we really did a job on it. We beat them 3-0. And it was a great game. And I'll tell you, one of the great goals that game, we had a right wing, and now his name just escapes me.
Gladstone Ofori.
Gladstone Ofori.
I guess
Gladstone Ofori is on the right wing. Peter Short said he loved Gladstone because he called Gladstone a burner because Gladstone had amazing speed. If you're Gladstone on the right, Carlos on the left, and Raul down the middle, Rato da Costa down the middle, he sent a ball. Peter Short sent a long ball down the right wing. Gladstone took it right out of the foot, went 50 yards in, hit a blistering shot that hit the crossbar, and it came back. And just about 10 yards away was Renato Da Costa, and he just went up in the air and he just whacked that rebound right in. The goalkeeper didn't have a shot. That was the third goal. It was one of the most beautiful goals you've ever seen. But it was a great pass from Peter to the burner on the right side, and of course they were shifting looking for Carlos, but it was Gladstone who took a tremendous volley and just banged it off the crossbar, but Renato put the rebound in, and it was just in the air. I just could still picture him going up with his head and chest and banging that ball right off his head, and that was the third goal.
And the next game was down in Washington. I still remember this. That's the first soccer match I ever saw. It was on television. It was telecast back to Rochester, and I was in the barber shop with my father. He was getting his hair cut, and the barber, who must have been Italian, yeah. I don't remember his name, but he had the game on, and I was watching the second leg there.
Now, where do you remember what station you watched it on?
I believe it was it Channel 10?
No.
13?
No. We did this. The Lancers did this. We went to public television.
Really?
Went to public at Channel 21, and we persuaded them to do the game. They said, well, if you pick up the camera crew, cost the camera, we'll do the game. So we did the game in home game here in Rochester and the game in Washington. Went on public television.
How about that?
And that was the only game televised that year. That was the Lancers. Lancers did it in that year. What coverage that was. And I'm still looking for that tape. If anyone has that tape, you got to call me because I'm looking for that tape.
Go back into the WXXI archives.
They don't have it.
Really?
Because I already checked the WXXI archives, and they said they destroyed all those tapes, Charlie.
Oh,
They just printed over them.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I did that about 4 or 5 years ago. I did a search over there. Someone in this community has that tape, an old VHS, and I'd love to get it. But that's how it happened. That's how it happened.
So the Darts won that game 3-1, but the Lancers ended up winning the league title 4-3 on aggregate.
Right, and we scored that. Carlos Medieri scored that goal, that 3-1 goal late in the game.
So if it had been tied, they would have gone into extra time.
Absolutely.
So that last goal, really, Carlos was the MVP, and he proved it. That was actually the goal in that second leg that gave the Lancers the NASL title.
Yeah, well, you know, he played against a great center halfback by the name of Willie Evans, big, tall African guy who was strong as could be. He was their center half. And those two were always matched up against one another. If you come to my office, there's a great picture of the two of them, Carlos dragging that Willie Evans' right arm, but it's a great picture. It's a great picture. Always were going head to head. That's when Carlos was fearless, absolutely fearless.
So what was the reaction in Rochester for the Lancers winning the title?
Well, when we flew home, there was a crowd of at least well over 1,000 people waiting at the airport for us, and we came in with a championship trophy, and the captain Charlie Mitchell was carrying the trophy, and. Everybody, we had over 1,000 people at the airport waiting for us. It was just tremendous, just fantastic.
Well, that certainly was a memorable year in Rochester sports history, the year 1970, as the Lancers brought home the North American Soccer League title, the first major sports title for the city of Rochester since the 1951 Rochester Royals. And for those of us who saw that team play, for those of us who saw the matches on television or at Howder Stadium, it's something we will certainly never forget. In part 3 of our series with Charlie Schiano, we will discuss the year 1971 and the Rochester Lancers and the two longest matches played in the history of professional soccer, both right here in Rochester at Hollander Stadium. And also talk about a title that the Lancers won in 1971 that many people have forgotten about. We will have part 3 of our interview with Charlie Schiano on the history of soccer in Rochester on SoccerIsKickingTheGrass.com in about a week. So be sure to come back to our website and look for it then. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for listening to this podcast version of Soccer is a Kick in the Grass. Soccer is a Kick in the Grass podcasts are brought to you by the following sponsors: Top Notch Monogramming, JC Fibers of Rochester, and Salvatore Pizza. Be sure to keep visiting soccerisakickinthegrass.com for future podcasts. And don't forget, soccer is a kick in the grass.